Hello everyone and welcome to Daily Newspaper Analysis, which is brought to you by LawSeeKho. So today we will be discussing the articles for 1st and 2nd February, that is for yesterday and today. So as you know that on 1st, that is yesterday, the budget, that is the union budget or the annual financial statement, has been tabled in the parliament. So mostly all the discussions now are all circumferencing around the budget. So here we have two articles from yesterday's newspapers. The first one is the budget picture, which is from the Indian Express, and this talks about the trend, basic trend that the budget for 2022-23 has followed. So what is it we'll be discussing here. The next one is from The Hindu, which is titled as the Indian Employment Scenario. This article talks about the changes in the employment and the unemployment that have taken place so far and what prospects do we have in this direction. And the third article is from today's The Indian Express newspaper, which is titled as The Economic Survey Demystified. So as we know that one of the other important documents other than the union budget we have is the Economic Survey. So what has the Economic Survey put forward for this year? As in, you know, what have been the outcomes of the previous year will be discussed. As we know that Economic Survey is a backdated document. So we'll be discussing that as well. So this newspaper analysis is presented by me. My name is Sheva Khan. I am a BA LLB law graduate and I have completed my law degree from Uttaranchal University with a gold medal in my badge. I have also been a national debater and a public speaker. And right now at LawSeeKho, I'm working as an expert for current affairs and I'm also working as the manager for current affairs vertical. With this, let's discuss the first article from yesterday's newspaper, which is about the budget picture. So the finance minister has bet on significantly increasing the capital expenditure to start a virtuous cycle of growth. Now in this article, we'll be talking about two important things. First is the capital expenditure and the other is the revenue expenditure. Now when we talk about the capital expenditure, it basically means the expenditure into long-term things. Now this could be into machineries, into industries, roads, buildings, infrastructure, structures, hospitals, etc. So the budget says, or the finance minister has said, that this year we will be increasing the amount of money spent for such capital expenditure, and that will ultimately help us in having the virtuous, please do not be confused with vicious, it is absolutely opposite, and by virtuous we mean the right kind of thing that we need, all right? So virtuous cycle of growth. So let's talk about the brief analysis of the pre and post budget changes. So what were the things existing before the introduction of this budget and what will be the changes coming after this introduction? So firstly, let's discuss challenges faced by the Indian economy. So India's GDP, that is the gross domestic product. For that clarity, please understand that the gross domestic product, as the name itself is saying, is basically the total value of the goods produced within an economy in the domestic area, that is within an economy, and that has to be in a particular period of time, generally which is taken to be as 1 year. That basically is called as the gross domestic product. So the India's GDP growth has been decelerating, that is it has been decreasing, all of us know, since the time of 2017-18, and unemployment also is at a high of 40 years, which means that we hadn't had such levels of unemployment in the last 40 years that we have had to see in the last 3 to 4 years. So although the recovery is as steep as the contraction, the graph does not truly define the pain points of the weaker section. Now definitely, you know, many a times we were talking about, you know, the K-shaped recovery, and the recovery is there. That's not the case that we're not seeing any recovery at all. But still, if we talk about the weaker section of the society that probably need the best levels of increment and improvement, there we have not been able to achieve a lot. So this is now confirmed that the private consumption of an individual, that is 56% of the GDP, is less than the pre-pandemic levels. So which means that after the 2019 time, that is after the COVID-19 pandemic has hit us all, so the private consumption has decreased, which means that people have not been able to spend on themselves for their own amenities, facilities, maybe their own kind of education, lifestyle, etc. So it also means that companies will not invest in new capacities, open new jobs and income streams for people. Now here you need to understand one thing, that when we talk about the companies providing various kinds of facilities, you know, or be increasing their investment, it also depends on the capacity of the people to avail these things. Right now, if you think that people themselves are not having money, or they are not able to spend onto their individual expenditure, so do you think they'll be able to avail various kinds of other facilities available in the market? Definitely no. So definitely it will decrease. So it means that companies will not invest in new capacities and they will not open new jobs, because if they provide for new jobs, they will definitely have to pay as well, right? They'll be paying salaries, right? So in that situation, what will happen is they will not be able to pay proper salaries because the money is shrinking down in the economy. And in such situation, because of the lack of jobs, the people will not have jobs and thus the economy will further fall. Basically, the government or, you know, the finance ministry has actually tried to, you know, is trying to solve all these issues itself by the capital expenditure. So it says that if we'll be, you know, putting up money or we'll be investing money into, you know, industries, other kinds of creative stuff and, you know, the roads and etc. So this will actually help people to spend more and this will give them the right opportunity to be, you know, participative in the economy. So let's see that what has been the strategy chosen by the finance ministry and how is this strategy different from countries like the United States. So the budget 2022 focuses on increasing the capital expenditure and limiting the revenue expenditure. Now there are two terms here which we are talking about. First is the capital expenditure, which I've already explained to you, is basically the long-term investment in the longer or the bigger infrastructure. You know, this can be the schools, hospitals, roads, industries, etc. On the contrary, we have the revenue expenditure. Now, by revenue expenditure, we simply mean the amount of money that we need to run the basics or right now needed stuff that we have. Like, for example, there is an industry. So to run a particular machine, we need, let's say, X amount of diesel. Now, this X amount of diesel is the revenue expenditure, which at this moment we need to spend. So here, the budget 2022 says that instead of, you know, providing or putting all our efforts in the revenue expenditure, that is the short-term expenditure, we should be focusing on the capital, that is the long-term expenditure. So when done on a large scale, such expenditure will increase the aggregate income and thus boost private expenditure. Now here we need to understand one point. Let's say that there are no industries at all in the economy. Do you think that there will be, you know, good employment? Of course not. So definitely we need to have infrastructure wherein people can be employed into. So if we will have industries, we will have hospitals, we will have various kinds of other, you know, such bodies. So they will be in capacity to provide the employment to the people. And thus the cycle, the virtuous cycle which we were talking about of growth will be initiated. So the stance or the contention that the government or the finance ministry says is that the capital expenditure or the long-term expenditure will increase our total income, that is our aggregate income, and thus it will boost private expenditure as well. So how will it happen? For example, there is this XYZ company which has under this initiative of capital expenditure has been set up by the government. Now this company will get money from the government and now it will provide employment to, let's say, 100 people in the economy. Now these 100 people will start working there and definitely will start earning something out of this company. Now, when they start earning out of this company, they will have some money in their hand and thus they will be in a capacity to do what we are calling as the private expenditure. And ultimately, when they will start spending in the economy, more money will be pushed in and thus the right circle of, you know, the growth or the right cycle of growth will be started. So this is how, you know, the government is planning to do. On the contrary, in the United States, the help extended to people were mostly of a fiscal nature. Now, whenever we talk about fiscal, please always remember that whenever the term fiscal is used, it always refers to the expenditure done by the government in the monetary terms. So it says that in United States, for example, the help was extended to people that was mostly of fiscal nature, wherein the money was transferred to their accounts. If you remember, such initiative was also taken in India, but on the contrary, it was also very much, you know, opposed as well. It was very much criticized too. In India, as we are saying, on the other hand, the help was in kind. Now, when we talk about cash and kind, so always, you know, just you can understand here that US had a greater initiative towards the cash help. Rather, in India, we are making it through kind, like, for example, the capital expenditure through buildings, infrastructure, etc. And moreover, the industries will get help on the credit line. So basically, on credit line, we here mean that the industries will not be given actual money for their functions to be running. Rather, they can be, you know, given some tax cuts, rate cut rates. You know, the corporate tax cut is the biggest example that we can see over here. Or they can get, you know, the loans on lesser interest, and they can also get easy outside financing. So here also, the industries or the, you know, the companies will be getting help in kind and instead of cash. So this will further fuel the sharp disparity between poor and rich in India. Now, here this point actually has been pointed out that instead of solving the purpose of grating your, making the economy better, this will further increase the disparity or the gap between poor and the rich. Now, how do you think this can happen? See, many a times what happens is that here when we're talking about the kind, like for example, easier loans, or if we talk about the tax cuts, etc., definitely these are the kinds of resources or these are the kinds of facilities that are more easily available to the rich in India. But if we talk about poor, for what that poor will be asking loan for when we already know that he does not have the capacity to repay the loan? So in that case, the cash would have helped that poor. But instead of that, what we are doing is that we are providing loans or we are providing tax cuts. So definitely these are not very feasible options for the poor in the country. Now the next point is about the feasibility of the CapEx push. Please remember, CapEx basically is the short form for the capital expenditure. So it says that the CapEx or the capital expenditure push might prove insufficient since the informal sector is deeply scarred and aggregate demand is very weak. As we were just discussing that in India, also in the Indian economy, the largest share of the economy is, it is shared by the informal sector, and which is definitely not doing very good at the moment. And also the aggregate demand, that how much the people are able to demand and how much are they able to pay in an economy has also reduced significantly. And that is why what we need currently is the short-term, things that we can do instead of just these long-term benefits. So the capacity utilization is also very low, and thus these companies will not be eager to ramping up any kind of investments. And one thing that we need to note here is that the capital assets, they are being focused on, they actually have very large gestation periods. Now, what do we understand by the gestation period? For example, you go to the market, you go to a nursery and you bring a small plant. Let's say it was a mango plant. Now you sow it into the soil, and let's say after 2, 3, 4 years, that plant becomes a small tree and starts laying out or starts, bearing fruits. Now the time period of this 2, 3 years for which we had to wait to receive or to being able to eat the fruits out of that tree, this time period is called as the gestation period. So for example, you make an investment, but it is not always possible that we get the returns right after we have made the investment. We need to sometimes wait. Now this waiting period is what we call as the gestation period. So definitely when we are already seeing that the capital expenditure is a long-term investment, it means that we will have to wait for a longer time period in order to avail the benefits that we are looking to. Whereas on the contrary, the kinds of problems that the Indian economy is facing, we need to have solutions that are on point and can give the results as soon as possible. So the pattern of budgets under the present regime basically is, it says that it is unclear that the present government has a fixed ideological approach to the budget. And it says that the direct cash transfers, snubbing the Land Acquisition Act, were long criticized before they were suddenly incorporated. And yes, they were. You remember that during the time of pandemic also, some direct cash transfers were done to the poor accounts. And further, the corporate tax cut seemed unnecessary since the firms will now improve their bottom lines. And as we have discussed about it all, so maybe the government should have given a deeper thought onto this. And let's see that what will be the future prospect of these ideas and contentions that have been taken by the finance ministry. With this, let's discuss the second article for the day, which talks about the Indian employment scenario. So the trends in the employment over the years have been erratic, giving no trend analysis for a set period of time. Now, we can say that all the three articles today are in some or the other way interlinked. As we were just in the previous article, we were discussing about the unemployment rates, and we got to know that the unemployment has been at a high of 40 years. So this again talks about the scenario of the Indian employment system. So the article points out that there are two major sources of data on workforce and employment that are available in India. The first is the decennial population census, which is like after 10 years we have the census, that is population counting of the country. And the second one is the nationwide quinquennial surveys on employment and unemployment by the National Sample Survey Office. Now we should also note here that the NSSO or the National Sample Survey Office survey has now been replaced by the PLFS, which is the Periodic Labor Force Survey, which uses a different sampling network, which means that the approach by the NSSO and that of the Periodic Labor Force Survey, they both are different, and that is why many a times the results are also very varying. So hence, the NSSO and the PLFS data are not comparable. So of course, because they're using absolutely different approaches towards the calculation, so their data is not really very comparable. So the NSSO data at best can serve as a reference point. So since, because you know, till the earlier time, we used to use NSSO survey. So that is why all the data that is available till date of the NSSO can be used as a reference point for further building upon of the data by the PLFS. So PLFS data shows us increase in worker to population ratio from 34.7% to 38.2%. So this is from the time period of 2017-18 to 2019-20. So it says that there has been an increase in the people or the workforce participation by approximately 4%. So this says that this is the reversal of the WPR, which is the workforce participation rate data from 2004-05. And it says that during the time of 2004-05, this rate of workforce participation had actually decreased. But now it is a good sign that we have actually an increase of that workforce participation rate. So it also shows that the employment has increased faster than the population. So which definitely, you know, if at all, if we talk about just the language, so it sounds really very good that the employment rate has been better than the, or it has been faster than just the population rate or increase in the population. So the PLFS also upholds that the female workforce has been increasing annually by 17%. Now, as we know that in India, one of the reasons why we see that the workforce has not increased significantly is that we are not able to incentivize the women. Specifically, if we talk about the urban areas, so we have not been able to incentivize the women to participate in the labor force, due to which the total labor force is not very high. So if we talk about the PLFS, it says that the female workforce has been increasing annually by 17%, which considerably is a good point to note. So it also says that the women workforce in rural areas is higher than in urban areas due to less gender discrimination in manual labor in the rurals. So if we note that most of the work in the rural areas is associated with the agriculture job. In that situation, many a times women and men are considered equal, because many times, you know, the manual labor, because for all the heavy tasks now we have machineries, and for the other like sowing and rowing, we need people, and men and women are considerably equally efficient when it comes to such rural works. But when we talk about the urban areas or the kind of jobs that are available in the urban areas, let's say maybe of construction companies. So in that situation, there is a lot of discrimination that is seen, and men are generally preferred over women to be given employment in this sector. So the periodic labor force survey data also shows that the unemployment status has decreased from 6.1% to 4.8%. Now this is also from the same time period of 2017-18 to 2019-20. So it says that the unemployment status has also decreased. But yet again, please guys, we need to note here that all of these is, this is just the data that is available. Maybe that could be a fact that in the reality or in the real sense, or in the practical world, the situation might be quite different as what we are studying in this article. So despite this, it says that the unemployed people have increased by 2.3 million between this time period. So now this is so ironical that the rate of unemployment, you know, the unemployment status, for example, if you ask someone that are you not employed? So that person, you know, if at all one person says that I am unemployed, so people saying that they're unemployed has decreased. All right. But on the contrary, in the real sense, the number of unemployed people has increased. So this could be a possibility wherein there are chances of disguised employment, wherein we feel that we are employed into some or the other agency, but we're not really reaping enough out of it, or we're not able to even earn the basics for our own survival. So that is what we feel, and we actually, like, practically we can say, or, you know, like hypothetically, we can think that we are employed, but if that employment is not even able to serve the basic, you know, minimal expenditure of myself itself or my family, so definitely it's not reaping the benefits of employment. And that is what we call as the disguised employment. So the PLFS data also shows that there has been no increase in industry intake that has to be noticed. So industry intake, wherein we are talking about that various industries, the manufacturing sector, etc., they have also not been able to, you know, work a lot in the line or on the lines of increasing the employment amongst the people. So it says that between 2019-20 and the previous 2017-18, 56.4 million jobs were created, which can be divided into these categories. The first one was agriculture in the elite sectors, which was the highest at 57% approximately. Then we had the services sector at 28%, and then we had the industry at 14%. So presently, the country should reconsider its policies around the industry-led economy and bringing it into agrocentric. Now, as we can clearly see here, that agriculture and the elite sectors have had the greatest or the best impact in providing the employment. So definitely we can lay our focus greater or in a better manner in the agriculture sector. Also, it says that much more employment needs to be generated in the manufacturing and the services sector clearly. And anti-labor intensive laws, employment linked production incentives could be brought in for further employment opportunities. So definitely we should make our economic system more intensive, wherein more and more labor can be employed into the system, and thus any industry that has better employment or that provides for better employment can be given better incentives. With this, let's discuss the last article for the day, which talks about the economic survey. So we have actually broken down the economic survey into whatever things that we are getting for now. So the economic survey 2021-22 focuses on post-pandemic recovery. Of course, that how are we able to recover post-pandemic, and basically that how was the year in this situation the previous year. Please remember that two of these documents that we are talking about, economic survey and budget. So when we talk about the budget, it gives us the predictions for the coming financial year, right? That what would be the stance of the government, what would be the expenditure of the government in various sectors, this and that, in the coming financial year. So that, like, we have the Union Budget 2022, so it will discuss about the financial year 2022 to 2023. But when we talk about the economic survey, so as you're seeing, it is a survey. Now, survey is done of something that already exists. So which means that we in economic survey discuss that how has been the economy of the country, or how far the government policies have been able to achieve in the previous financial year. So for example, if we have economic survey 2022, so it will be discussing about the financial year that was the previous financial year. So please note, this is an important point. Now let's see that what are the notable observations through the economic survey. So it talks about the fiscal space. Fiscal space here, we simply mean that where all was the scope for the government to do the expenditure. So the focus on capital expenditure needs to be stressed to reach the target of fiscal deficit of 6.8% in GDP in the current year. So again, almost the same thing which the budget is also predicting for the coming time, that it says that we need it, there was whatever was there. So as you know, for the better thing to be done in the future, we should be laying our focus on the capital expenditure, and we need to target on the fiscal deficit. Now, what do we mean by fiscal deficit? Simply, it means the difference between the government expenditure and the tax received by the government. For example, the government is spending 100 rupees for all the functions that it does in the economy. But on the, on the return side, it only is getting, let's say, 85 rupees as the taxes from the people. So 15 rupees will be the fiscal deficit, which means that here is a difference instead of going positive. So it says that we are in a fiscal deficit of 6.8% in the GDP. And that is why to fight against it, we need to have capital expenditure. So the survey also states that the banking sector has improved significantly with less NPA and more capitalization. Now, as we know that the problem of the non-performing assets was, highly alarming when we were talking about the banking sector. And in the previous years, a lot of banks have been actually merged together. I hope that all of you might have gone through that some of the other time. So it said that there was an improvement in the banking sector, and we have actually improved significantly as we now have less non-performing assets with the banks, and we have more capitalization, which means that we have more money, that is money in the name of asset rather than non-performing asset. So it says about the second thing, that is vaccine economics. It says that vaccination now should be viewed as a buffer against economic disruption, and it should not be taken as the only and the sole whole healthcare issue, because we have various other things as well. And if you have noticed that in this budget also, we have had a minimal though, but yes, a significant one, decrease in the expenditure on the health sector, and that is approximately by 0.08%. So definitely there will be focus now laid upon other issues concerning health, let's say anemia, tuberculosis, etc. And thus vaccination should not be the only focus area in this coming time. Then we talk about the inflation pressures. It says that the survey notes that while the consumer price index, that is the CPI inflation, is at tolerable of 5.2%, the WPI, which is the wholesale price index inflation, is well in double digits. Now, as you know that the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank of India has a mandate to maintain the inflation levels at 4 ± 2%, which means that either it can be as less as 2% or as high as only 6%. So yes, still it is 5.2. So yes, it has not crossed the 6% limit, but yes, we need to work here also. But on the contrary, the WPI, which is the wholesale price index, this is well into double digits and definitely we need to do something about that. So the inflationary pressures could lead to unwinding of liquidity measures by systematically important central banks, and thus we need to do or take actions in the right time so that, you know, this problem should not be causing great issues in the economic system or the economic health of the country, and it should be curbed at the earliest. Next, it talks about is the global uncertainty, which it says that the sizable accretion of foreign exchange reserves makes India's external sector resilient to withdrawal of liquidity. And it says that the supply side disruptions and exacerbated by recovery in demand pose significant risks. So it says that we might be subjected to some global uncertainty, but still we are quite a resilient sector when we talk about the global foreign exchange. What we need to do here is that the supply side disruptions, which means that as a supplier or as an exporter, we need to work, and otherwise we can have significant demand risk as well. So the energy risks it talks about, it says that the calls for building reserves for intermittent renewable energy with solar PV, that is solar photovoltaic cells and the wind farms. And definitely we know that after India also participated in the Conference of Parties 26 at Glasgow recently, India has been one of the, you know, the best, and actually it has been the only country that has fulfilled its nationally determined contributions as it had promised in the Paris Agreement 2015. So definitely India needs to work further in the energy efficiency and energy safeguarding when we talk about the sustainable sources of energy. So here this also talks about various way forward that we can do, it is based on the macroeconomic stability. India is well suited for the challenges in 22-23, and the policies need to be aligned with agility, making repeated iterations and incremental adjustments, and also the real-time data has to be vigorously collected and synthesized for this to happen. So let's hope that the coming financial year brings all the kinds of reliefs and facilities to the people of India, and that we have a better year finance-wise, health-wise and everything in the coming times. So this was all for the day. If you liked it, please give it a thumbs up. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining in. And if you wish to download the PDF of today's slides, you can join our Telegram channel. The link is there in the description box below, or you can scan this QR code that you can see on your screens right now. Also, for other content, please follow us on our Instagram channels for Judiciary, Clat Prep, UGC Net, as well as Law Finance Exams. Thank you so much.